Today, we welcome our most revered Vivekananda Mataji, a senior senescence of our order and head of the Pangor Retreat Center. Even though of her active tour of East and West Coast in America for a long time, she agreed to come here to grace us all. Like last year, we will enjoy this retreat also. She is going to take the subject Mysticism in the Life of Sri Ramakrishna. Welcome to this great master from the book, The Great Master, Leela Prasanna.
I hope all of you have read something about the great master. I'm sure everyone can hear me. The topic is not very easy. I hope you are prepared to walk along with me. The topic is Sri Ramakrishna, the great master, understanding mysticism through the life of Sri Ramakrishna. The word mysticism is a Western term. I think it should have been sadhana, which is nearer to us, a Sanskrit word, which maybe we understand a little bit. In order to go into this subject, which is very difficult to understand from our point of view, we need to go back 200 years in the 19th century, early 19th century, when Sri Ramakrishna was born. If we do not understand the background to the manifestation of such people, very rare people, we will never understand what exactly they came to do. This was the time when India was being ruled by foreigners, the English people, who had brought their own ideas about what human life is or what human life is supposed to mean and what is the connection of human life with the idea of religion and God. Religion, according to Hindu tradition, is absolutely central to human life. Religion is not unnatural. It is not something abnormal that some people practice and some people don't, which is current today. There are many people all over the earth today, and perhaps the majority in India also, in the West definitely, who feel that religion has been the cause of problems. Therefore, the earlier we get out of religion and religious practices, the better it is for ordinary human life. Religion has created many problems, many rules, regulations, do's and don'ts, which have made ordinary life very difficult to lead. Therefore, we should get out of this terrible problem of trying to understand what religion is, what God is, where God is, whether He is in the temple or the mosque or the church, whether there are three, four different gods, one in the church, one in the temple, one in the mosque and other places also, so that we can live our ordinary daily life without bothering about God at all. It is supposed to solve human problems. And in the West especially, Europe, America, and other countries also, which are imitating the Western civilization, many people feel that if they could only eliminate the idea of God and religion from their life, maybe we all feel that, because we don't really know anything about what God is or what religion is, it would be better. So 200 years ago, this was the background in India. And they also added the Western idea that Christianity was going to solve all the problems, because Jesus Christ and his character, being absolutely historical, that is, he was really born on this earth, whereas the other incarnations like Krishna and Rama and others, nobody really knew whether they were historical people or not. Therefore, if one could only worship Jesus Christ, it would be the best for all people. Everyone would be brothers and sisters, and they would all live in a paradise. India was being told that all your gods and goddesses are fictitious. They are not real. They are just statues. And to worship statues is not the idea of human, reasonable way of functioning. So we do not really know what it did to India of that time. But if you think of India of today, we still have those ideas, and we are not sure how to get out of this problem, whether there is a God or not, whether there are many gods, whether there is one God, how to approach that God, is it really necessary to have a God in life, or can we live without the idea of religion and God? Is it our need that there should be a God, or is it God's need? Does God need us, or do we need God? These are very deep problems today, and I don't know whether we are really able to solve these problems today, unless we go to someone who has the authority to show us that yes, there is someone called God, whatever you may understand about it, and it is our need. It's not God's need, it's my need. So to realize it is my need also needs a little bit of thinking, a little bit of understanding. Because we understand our needs in a very different way. Our need is for food, for dress, for place to stay. But need for God, well, going to the temple or listening to lectures, that seems good. But is there a deeper need for God or not? We are not very sure. So, Sri Ramakrishna was born in this land. This is a very strange kind of a land, though we do not really think about it any longer, that the ancient culture of India is based on religion being central to human life. That you are here for no other reason but to see God. Right? That's a very big thing, to see God. Today, I don't know whether we really believe that human life is supposed to give me some kind of a vision of God, or at the most I can go to a temple, at the most I can listen to lectures, at the most I can practice a little bit of japam. But to see God seems not real enough. So unless you read Sri Ramakrishna's life in depth, we don't really understand whether it is really my need that I need to see God, or I need to realize God, or I need to have at least some rational idea about God, or not. We don't know. Anyway, here was a man born in India, in Bengal. We can ask, why in Bengal? Because Bengal was the center of East and West meeting together for the first time in history. The English people belonged to the Western civilization, and they had conquered India. They had made Bengal their center, Calcutta the capital of India, and therefore God, it seems, God knows everything, even the political situation and even where he or she should take birth. Seems a very strange thing that they should know. Without information technology and without all these things, they seem to know. So he is born in a village in Bengal, quite far away, not very near in those days. People had to walk from Kamarpukur and Jayarambati to Calcutta. But that is what they accepted. Why would they accept to be born in a faraway village? Why not in Calcutta itself? Because Calcutta by that time had lost its touch with the central motivation of wanting God. This is the effect of huge cities when millions of people live together and everyone competes to enjoy life. It is very difficult to remember that your most basic need is realization of God or religion or anything like that. So he is born in a faraway land, faraway village, without much education. Here is Calcutta, where the universities are being opened, not only for men, for women also. And women in those days, they had just started coming out. So he is born in a faraway village without education. I believe he did not like school. He did not like especially arithmetic and counting. Why should he not like it? We are today very busy with counting money, but it seems that he did not want to count money. Why not? He better think about these things. So he grows up a very happy child, doing dramatics about the Puranic stories of Krishna and Rama, and then slowly grows up, has many experiences of strange kinds. He seems to go into a different kind of consciousness very easily. Maybe you people know that he is supposed to act as Shiva, and he is dressed up as the idea of Shiva is, and immediately he is lost. He can't speak, he cannot, he's not conscious of this world at all. What kind of a thing is that? Today, supposing we try to think about it, that there are levels of consciousness where just putting on a dress will take you out of this into something else. Is that normal? Is that abnormal? Or is it something to be wished for? I am suddenly reminded of certain ideas that today, supposing I want to be considered as a modern person, I'll have to put on a modern dress. So, what is the connection between a dress, the way I dress, and the way my mind functions, and the way my consciousness changes? I put on jeans, let us say, and whatever goes with the jeans or whatever, and immediately something within me starts changing. Isn't that very strange that such a thing can happen? It seems that Sri Ramakrishna was so sensitive that he had only to look at a picture, he had only to look at something very beautiful, like the swans flying against black clouds, or putting on a dress of Shiva, and merging into a different state of consciousness. Is that our need also? In every way, if we do not understand these things as connected to us, we will never understand what he came to show. So putting on a dress is a very important thing. Supposing I put on like this color, what is the significance? Does it change my inner attitude to the world around? Does it give me another state of consciousness? If I am very sensitive, that is what it is supposed to do. You put on a dress and you become a god or a goddess. So this is one hint about sadhana, about mysticism, that whatever you are sensitive to in a very deep way will definitely change your inner attitude to the extent that you are sensitive to. So he becomes a young man and comes to Calcutta, and you know that the Dakshineshwar Kali Temple had been erected, and his brother, elder brother, had become the priest there. He comes there as an ordinary Brahmin young man, and he is quite sure that Brahmins are supposed to behave in a particular way, they are supposed to eat a particular kind of food, they are supposed to mix with people in a particular way, and he is such a staunch Brahmin, that whatever food is cooked in the temple, he refuses to eat it because he believes he is not supposed to eat that kind of food. So he cooks for himself. You would say that's a very ordinary way of functioning. He is identified with his, with the way, with the customs that he is used to. How can such a man, such a person become the incarnation of God? Swami Sharadananda, who has written the Leela Prasanga, says that we make tremendous mistakes when we do not understand that whenever anyone takes birth in a human body, the human body makes it compulsory for the mind to behave like a human being. Whether the inside is different or not, since we belong to a particular species, that is human beings, there is a human side even to the greatest manifestation of spirituality. He says in other incarnations like Krishna and Rama and Jesus Christ and the Buddha, we know nothing about their sadhana. We know nothing about their struggles. We know nothing about how they wept for God or how they achieved the kind of powers that they showed later on. In the life of Sri Ramakrishna, you can see from the very beginning that he is trying to realize something which he believes is real. What is the idea that is real? He believes, because he has heard or he has listened to many stories, that God is real. In what form? As a Hindu, it does not make any difference. It can be any form. It can be male, it can be female, it can be any aspect of the female deity also. There is a spectrum of deities that we have, goddesses, from Lakshmi, who is very popular, to Chandika or Kali, who is not so popular. We need to think about these things. Why is it that Lakshmi is so very auspicious and Kali is supposed to be inauspicious? I know that in many parts of India, Kali is not worshipped. She is frightening. To the Western people, she is not only frightening, unacceptable. How can God take that kind of a form? A naked woman with her tongue hanging out, with a garland of human skulls, and with a sword in one hand, how can that can be the manifestation of God? Strangely, in India, where auspiciousness has become almost like a disease, what is auspicious? What is inauspicious? Once upon a time, we did not have all those. We knew that there was only one God who manifested herself or himself as both auspicious and inauspicious. Like you have this beautiful hymn that we sing maybe everywhere in India, Srishti Sthiti Vinashanam. It's supposed to be the definition of the mother goddess. The mother goddess is both Srishti, Sthiti, and Vinashana, destruction. So we did not make any difference between auspicious and inauspicious. But today we have become, what should I say, so abnormal, so diseased, and such cowards that we will sing it, but we will never try to understand what is the meaning of Srishti Sthiti Vinashanam, and why would we address the goddess in these three terms. So, auspiciousness is accepted. Inauspiciousness, according to our ideas, is not acceptable. And here is a young man, Sri Ramakrishna, who has started worshipping what is supposed to be the most inauspicious manifestation of the mother goddess, Kali. Most of you perhaps now are very familiar with that figure. So why would he do that? Why not worship? Because there was a Radha Krishna temple there also. There was also Shiva. Shiva is also supposed to be auspicious. Nobody knows whether he is also inauspicious at the same time or not. But we would rather close our eyes to that which we don't like, that which is unpleasant, that which is supposed to be evil, or that which is hard to understand. We have become so weak that we do not want to think clearly any longer. So Sri Ramakrishna is worshipping Kali as a manifestation of the motherhood of God. Why the motherhood of God? Aren't there enough mothers on this earth? Aren't there enough children on this earth? Aren't the mothers mothers any longer? Don't they know how to behave like mothers? Is it? I find it very strange that in the Bhagavad Gita it says that when there is adharma, God takes birth. So what is the adharma of this age that he had to think of the motherhood of God? Has something happened to the feminine principle in this age, starting 200, 300, 400 years ago, and especially in India, that he had to wake up the motherhood of God, not the fatherhood of God? Krishna, Rama, these are the male deities. Shiva also, very popular and worshipped all over India. Even today, worshipped all over India. So, why the motherhood of God? And why this so-called ferocious motherhood of God? Has something happened to the mothers of this land? If you think, and if you try and understand, something definitely has happened. The mothers are not producing children who are brave, who are great, who are, let us say, able to understand what life is, who are able to take care of all kinds of situations, and especially 200 years ago, they definitely were not. Even today, whether they are or not, I don't know. Especially the sons of India. The sons of India, if the mothers of India are weak, what would happen to the children of India? That is what was happening. So I feel, it may be just my own idea, that the adharma of India started the day the motherhood of God became weak, represented by the millions of women in India. And therefore, he had to worship a manifestation of the motherhood of God which has a sword in hand. So, that is sadhana. In order to rouse that up, Swamiji says that he roused the Kula Kundalini of India especially and the world at large. What has happened to the female principle everywhere on this earth, not only in India, but everywhere? What is the weakness, the greatest weakness that you notice, which he wanted to eliminate? The greatest weakness was that we are scared. Scared of what? Almost everything. There's nothing that we are not scared of today. Whether it is physical or mental or emotional or intellectual, there is fear all around us. So, this fear that was inculcated by the mother to the child has to be eliminated. How would that be connected with his worship of Kali and trying to manifest a kind of power which would be accepted by the world today, so that every society becomes a society of purpose, meaningfulness, so that life can once again become a little more joyful, a little more meaningful, a little more purpose, accepting the purpose that the West has shown, that all you need is money in order to be happy, religious, spiritual, everything. All you need is money and a dress and certain mannerisms and certain kind of education. Look around and you will see that that is what is happening. Not that Sri Ramakrishna came and went away and all his ideas have been accepted. I think not a single idea has been accepted by us. Excepting that we say, all right, those who believe in Sri Ramakrishna, he is another incarnation of God. Just another incarnation of God and finished. So what do? You just pray to him. Pray for what? You just worship him with what? flowers, a little food, and that's enough. So the purpose of the coming of an incarnation is just to accept a few flowers. What about the adharma? Do we think about that? So this thinking, which is what I would call the sadhana of this age, is what is lacking. What he shows is something deeper than thinking. It isn't as if he thought about God. He tried to, what did he try to do? We have a word in our ancient literature called tapasya. The word tapa literally can mean burning. Tapa is burning, tapa is heat, tapa is austerity, tapa is sadhana, tapa is also discipline. What did he do to himself? Basically, if you think of his life, he did something to himself. We have an idea that in order to realize God, you do something outside there. Like you go to a temple or just sit down and pray. But he seems to have done something very different. He did something to himself. How did he do it? We have beautiful descriptions in the Great Master as well as in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna where hints are given. Don't think that we have the whole of his sadhana in so many details. We are just given certain hints. What is the hint? One of them is, after he finished his ritual worship in the temple, he would vanish. His nephew, Hriday, who looked after him and who became his friend and companion and you can say servant also, would wonder, where does uncle, he used to call him mama, uncle, what does happen to uncle that he vanishes? Especially after the puja is over, he vanishes. At night, again he vanishes. As soon as the doors of the temple are closed, he again vanishes. And he doesn't know where he vanishes to. Because in those days, Dakshineshwar, just beyond the temple or beyond the Panchavati, it was a forest. So the uncle vanished into the forest where people did not go, even in the daytime. Why not? There were ghosts there, then there were snakes, and all kinds of things, which we are scared of. So the most basic fact that comes from studying the life of Sri Ramakrishna is, he is not scared. Why not? Is he not human being like us? Isn't he scared of ghosts and snakes and especially when I think of it, mosquitoes? There are horrible mosquitoes even today. Think of those days when it was a forest and he would go and sit there naked and do whatever he did to himself. So Hriday Ram, his nephew, was very curious to find out what does he do entering that forest, where does he go? So one day, with great difficulty, he goes there and sees that Sri Ramakrishna is sitting there in the dark. And he's taken out his Yajnapavi, which is supposed to be the mark of a Brahmin. And he's sitting there, closed eyes, and he doesn't know. And he goes straight there and says, Mama, what are you doing? You have taken out your Yajnapavi, which is supposed to be the symbol of a Brahmin, and you have done something very inauspicious. The idea of inauspicious starts with the outer. So Sri Ramakrishna tells him, you don't know. When you call on the mother, you have to go beyond auspicious and inauspicious. That's the first hint given about sadhana, about mysticism, that you have to forget the outer if you want to enter the inner. Why is it so difficult for us to forget the outer and enter the inner if we want to understand the idea of sadhana, because we believe that the outer is real, the inner does not exist. We have a very strange idea about ourselves. The inner does not exist. What is this inner? Supposing you say, oh, think of your heart, and then think of Sri Ramakrishna's image sitting there. So what would I think of? In today's age, we know what the heart looks like. Does the heart have any inner space where I can see Sri Ramakrishna's face? Immediately I think of the heart. It's the red pumping something that comes into the mind. And we are very scared of that pump. Because any day it can go off. And then what will happen to me? So our association with the pump is so great that today when we speak to each other, maybe very soon it will be, is your heart all right? Is it pumping properly? That is how we would be greeting each other very soon. Anyway, so the inner, he is trying to enter inside himself. It's such a strange thing that we don't realize that when I think of myself, I have to think of the body. It's such a strange, which is called inauspiciousness according to our psychology. The most inauspicious thing would be to think of yourself as the body. Well, we have got used to it, and we think that is how we have to think of ourselves. Then, not even think of the body, think of the dress. So become more outer. Then, even that is not enough, think of the face. And the face is what we see in the mirror all the time. So, we are trying to live on the level of the face, and that goes against sadhana. The first step of sadhana is forget yourself as the body. Enter within. Enter within is a terrible problem for us. With great difficulty, we try to think of an image of God. An image of God is also the body. Do we try to enter inside the image of God? We have been told that there are many ways of thinking of God also. There is the outer image, there is the outer dress, there are the various weapons in the hands of gods and goddesses, especially for the Hindus. And there is also the qualities of God, like mercifulness and I won't say auspicious, inauspicious, because we are used to think that God is supposed to be merciful all the time, without realizing that this world, which belongs to God, apparently, we have to believe as believers that this God, this world, has been created by God, and it is full of nothing but inauspiciousness today for us. So could it be that Sri Ramakrishna, worshipping this image of Mother Goddess, is asking us also to accept it? Accept the world as it is, with all its evil and perhaps a little bit of good also. Though today, if you talk to anybody, nobody seems to see anything good about this world at all. So, this is another type of sadhana that is for this age, and it is a terrific idea that I am supposed to do sadhana, discipline myself in such a way that I can understand and accept that this world today all around me is full of so many problems, I won't call it inauspicious any longer, so many problems, so many tensions, so many struggles, such competition, that this is what God is. Can I equate the two images? If I don't equate the two images, what is my idea of God? And what do I expect? So, what happens to my mind? It becomes more and more joyless because I don't see it. I don't see it around me because we have become so much externalized. We think of the world so much. I won't say so much. We think of nothing else but the world around and what is happening in the world around and the tremendous events that are taking place in this world, that either I equate it with the image of Kali and see that both are the same in a very strange way. The sword in the left hand, do I see it in the world around? Of course I see it. I know that there are killings happening all the time, so that is the sword of Kali. Then what about this blackness that she seems to represent, the darkness that seems to be there? So don't I see it in the world around? I do. I go on the road and I see nothing but darkness. I am trying to save myself all the time. Whether I am in a car or whether I am walking on the road, I am always trying to save myself from the darkness. Am I supposed to accept it rather than save myself? So, am I asking you to accept walking right inside the traffic and get run over? That's not exactly. So, Sri Ramakrishna, what was he trying to find out in this image which he equated with the idea of the motherhood of God? Fatherhood of God can be accepted. Yes, fathers can be cruel sometimes. They can slap a child or they can discipline a child. But the motherhood of God? In this age, the motherhood is supposed to be so powerful and so very ferocious that I am supposed to equate it with the life that I am surrounded by. Either turn within completely and see that beyond the darkness is light, which is what he is trying to prove. That sadhana means look at darkness but see light. How is that possible? I go on the street and I see nothing but darkness. I am trying to save myself all the time. I am trying to save myself everywhere. Whether it is inside the house or outside the house or inside my office or outside my office or wherever, I am always trying to protect myself. And here is an image which says, do not protect yourself. If the sword means anything, it means be ready to be sacrificed. I am giving my own interpretation to the ideas, but this is the way I think of it. The idea of Kali seems to be that you better be ready to get your head cut off. In what way? Literally? I am sure we need to go a little deeper than that. She doesn't really want to cut my head off, but she definitely wants to cut something. What is that something in me which the mother Kali is so fascinated by that she wants to cut it off? In a simple religious terms, it's my ego. She wants to cut it. Why would she want to cut it? What does she gain by cutting my ego? Or what would I gain by letting go of my ego? Because my ego is the most precious center of me. Though we think we are the body, But if you really look at yourself, the way we address ourselves, I don't think of the body all the time. I, this tremendous I, which is what God is interested in, cutting it. Very strange. If I have been created by God, then my ego also has been created by God. What for? And that is what sadhana is connected to. Why am I supposed to sacrifice my ego? What will I gain? Sri Ramakrishna says, what you will gain is the real I. He used to call it kachami pakami. Kachami means the unripe ego and the ripe ego. What is the difference between the unripe ego and the ripe ego? So he is not interested, God is not interested in cutting me completely. She is interested in transforming me, changing me. Now, don't I want to change? I'm changing all the time, but not wanting to change, which is something very strange. I know that physically I'm changing all the time, but I don't pay attention to that. Now, the purpose of human life seems to be change yourself consciously, because that is the sacrifice that the motherhood of God really wants in this age. So what is the difference between the unripe I and the ripe I? He says, think of yourself as the servant of the mother. Why should I think of myself as a servant of the mother? Who is this mother? He says, it's such a strange idea that there is a mother of this universe who creates me in order to transform me from something that is totally unripe to something that is like a fruit, let us say, fruit ready to be eaten, sweet. So, how would I become sweet in the eyes of this motherhood of God? The servant of God, he said. Or the child of God. What is so difficult about becoming the child of God? Well, the unripe ego says, I am an adult human being. I am not a child any longer. So I want to play adult games. What are the adult games? Supposing we start with the adult game, the basic adult game is I am. First I say I am, then I say I am the body. Then I say I am my thoughts, I am my emotions, I am my... Then slowly and slowly I go around and maybe increase the circle a little bit. I am my relationships, I am my possessions. It goes on and on and on and on, never becoming ripe, because in order to become ripe, I need to change the direction back to I am, and then say, I am the servant of God or the child of God. In this age, why does he insist on servant of God or child of God? Why not once upon a time we had the friend of God, we had the lover of God, the beloved of God, what else was there? What else was there? A peaceful relationship with God, which is there in the Upanishads. Shanta, Sakhya, Vatsalya, what else is there?
Dasya.
Dasya, and? Alright. So, why doesn't he want those attitudes? These are attitudes for disciplining myself. Disciplining what? The animal in me. Am I sure that there is an animal in me? Of course not. How can there be? But supposing somebody touches my, let us say, anything. Maybe these are the symbols of today. Supposing somebody touches this, and what do I do? Immediately, well, is the animal there or not? the animal is hiding. So, Sri Ramakrishna says, in this age, if you want to conquer this animal, you have to adopt a bhava. Bhava is an attitude. An attitude, a relationship to God. Which relationship would make you controlled automatically? I am a servant of God. What is a servant? Has no desire of his or her own. He's always at the beck and call of the master. Why don't I like it? In this age, why is it so difficult to become the servant of God? Don't think it's easy? It's terribly difficult. For instance, people like us, who have taken on the uniform also of the servant of God or whatever. Supposing somebody comes and says, oh, you are the servant here. Oh, no. It's not easy. The child of God, what is a child like? A child depends on the mother. Never does anything without asking the mother. So, supposing you say that, oh, you are the child of God. Not at all. I am a pravrajika and I have a big name also. So, what have I achieved? Oh, I have achieved so much. I've given so many classes. I have been 30 years here, 30 years somewhere else. So, don't think that these attitudes are very easy to practice. Is it easier to practice the other attitudes? Peaceful attitude. Is there any peaceful peace around in this age? I don't find it. There's no peace anywhere. How would I get peace in this age? I am tense all the time. I have to compete all the time. I have to think of my food, my place, all kinds of things. So that is not easy either. So he seems to think, Sri Ramakrishna, after having worked at himself through his own sadhana, trying to enter within himself, he entered various levels of consciousness, which we can discuss if you have the desire to understand. Finally, at the end, he said, I am the child of God. I am the child of the mother. Somebody says, will you come to my house? He said, I'll ask the mother. Totapuri says, I have come here to teach you Advaita Vedanta. Will you, I think you are capable, will you do it? He says, oh, I'll ask the mother. And Totapuri thinks that, well, maybe he is a childlike person. Maybe he'll go to his physical mother and ask. He goes straight to the temple. And Totapuri says, well, he will lose it, don't worry. I will teach him Advaita Vedanta and he'll forget his mother in the temple. Whereas Totapuri had to learn to become a child to the mother in the temple. Alright, so this is the idea that sadhana means entering within an attitude, within a relationship. Is a relationship unknown to us? Don't we relate? It's not something unknown. It's only that we do not know how to enter a relationship with the idea of God because we don't really believe that there is a God. As simple as that. Alright? Do we believe that yes, there was a man called Sri Ramakrishna? Oh yes, we do. His photo is there. But then, how do you enter a photo? For that also you have to relate. Supposing, as I give this example again and again, I want to become a cricketer. So, I'll place somebody's photo on my table because I have to relate to that person. Let us say, it used to be Sachin Tendulkar, now it is, who is it now? I know his name. Huh? Virat Kohli. So, I'll keep his photo there because I need to get that inspiration. But is that enough? Or would I go to the field and practice a little bit of cricketing in order to become like him? Exactly the same thing here also. If I want to become like Sri Ramakrishna to some extent, the child of God, I don't want to become Paramhamsa Sri Ramakrishna. But supposing I do want to become the child of Sri Ramakrishna, won't I have to do something? So that doing something is the sadhana of this age. All right?